Ready. All right,
Recording
so
has started.
excellent. Thank you very much. So welcome to the brothers that are just now popping into the meeting. It's great to see everybody here tonight. So first off, I want to say welcome everybody once again to this is what our fourth monthly Friday with Fridays, May of 2021. I remember just last month was March of 2020. It's fantastic to see time progress like that. So first and foremost, I want to say a big thank you to everybody who's showing up to these meetings. It means a lot to me to be able to see brothers on a regular basis, especially because I'm spending like 40 hours a week on Zoom with my own students. So it's wonderful to see your faces, and I'm so happy to spend some time with everybody tonight. And another special thank you to Brother Banks for sending me a message earlier in this week being like, hey, we're still doing this, right? So special thank you for that. Just wanted to remind everybody of a couple of the features of Zoom before we get started. First off, down at the bottom of the Zoom meeting, if you want to click on the Participants tab and the Chat tab, I will be the person communicating through... I will be communicating with Brother Banks. If people have questions or comments during the presentation tonight, feel free to put something into the chat and I will communicate it to him. I want to make sure that his screen is as open and clutter-free as possible. Additionally, if you'd like to show appreciation or reactions during this, I imagine we'll probably be going to hear some organ jokes at points tonight. So be sure to have that ha-ha reaction ready to go for all of those. Additionally, if there's anything that you need at some point, please feel free to toss it into the chat. You can send me a private message if necessary. That said, I will appreciate everybody for during the presentation to have their microphones muted so that we can't hear what's going on in your respective backgrounds. And I think that's all the good preliminary stuff. So with that in mind, I would like to introduce Brother Scott Banks. Brother Banks is a classically trained vocalist and conductor, having studied at Montclair State University. His past has taken him down many pathways to end up at Jim Whelan Boardwalk Hall. After years of success in the retail industry and leading his stores to record profitability, he began volunteering at Boardwalk Hall with the Pipe Organ Projects. Eventually, his hobby and release became his day-to-day job. He's been involved with numerous nonprofits over the years and is enjoying bringing his expertise in marketing and outreach to the Historic Organ Restoration Committee. He is a past master and secretary of Sextant Lodge number 286 FNAM in Monahawkin, New Jersey, and a past grand officer of the Order of the Eastern Star of New Jersey and organist of Bethlehem Chapter in Barnegat, New Jersey. He resides in Little Egg Harbor with his lovely wife, Laura, a fellow musician who loves teaming up musically with her husband. The title of the presentation tonight is Breathing Life into the Beast. Brothers, I am very happy to introduce Brother Scott Banks.
Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate that. I'm going to get right into it. And again, the building we're talking about is what's my background right there. A lot of people get confused. The historical name was the Atlantic City Convention Hall and Municipal Auditorium, especially considering right now with COVID and the vaccine center being at the Atlantic City Convention Center. We get about 20 people a day that come to this building thinking they're going to get their shots here, but unfortunately, it hasn't been the convention center for many years, but I'll get into that in the presentation. And without further ado, share that. Okay. So again, for any of you that are organists, you are looking at the only console in the world with 7 manuals or keyboards. And again, that's what sets us apart from a lot of the other big instruments. It's pretty iconic, and that picture is no longer adequate as we have changed the color scheme on that console, which you'll see at the very end of the presentation. So again, civic pipe organs were in vogue at the turn of the last century. They were really seen a lot in large cities where you had multiple movie palaces to provide accompaniment to silent films. That was their original output, but they were also the source of music in large spaces, again, without having public amplification systems until around 1930, even though Boardwalk Hall did have one of the first, they weren't very musical. So there are still some convention centers that still maintain their civic pipe organs, but a lot of them have been destroyed. A good example of that, you'll see Philadelphia on the list of the convention centers that had this. The instrument there was sent out to the University of Oklahoma to find a new life. And unfortunately, the University of Oklahoma has just completely disbanded their organ tech program, meaning that instrument is once again homeless and was now sold and parted out. So it is sad, but we strive here to make sure that the instrument that we take in our care is going to be held for many years and not have a similar fate. So there you see a shot of the building. Again, when this was built, it was known as the Atlantic City Convention Hall and Municipal Auditorium. We were built as the world's first all-purpose entertainment and convention venue. Construction began in August of 1926, concluded in April of 1929, and was dedicated in May of 1929. The real capstone to that was showing the progress of technology at that point. The electric light played a major part of the installations at the Atlantic City Convention Center. And what they did was have a ship about a quarter of a mile out at sea sound its klaxon. And that was received by an electric ear on the building. And the building suddenly came to light and life. So it was to show that not only was this built in a way that would last for hundreds of years, but it was also cutting edge technology at the time. The interior of the main arena itself, as we call it now, East Hall, has 5.5 million cubic feet of airspace. It's nearly 7 acres and had a seating capacity of 44,000 between the main arena and the secondary performance space, a 3,000-seat theater at the front of the building. The building itself is 288 feet wide, 488 feet long, and 135 feet high. Again, that is the original part of the building, which actually takes up an entire city block. And in 1970, if that was not enough, we actually expanded to the block next to us and had a second building built. The building itself was designed to basically take whatever you could envision in that building at that time. Right there, you can see an event filled to capacity, that is 41,000 people between movable chairs and a permanent balcony around the side of the arena. The first event that we held that the organ was debuted at was the 1932 Episcopal Church Convention. There's been a lot of other events there, though. Billy Graham's Crusade, the Beatles, just about a few months after that, the 1964 Democratic National Convention, which had a huge part to play in the civil rights movement. We now host Stockton University's graduation, and for most of its history, it was the home for the Miss America competition. The first indoor college football game was held in 1930. When World War II hit, Atlantic City became Camp Boardwalk, basically a military outpost, and that served as the training facility during that time where the soldiers would do their calisthenics every morning and then head out and do sorties on the beach. We were named to the United States Register of Historic Places in 1987. We are not only on the Register of Historic Places, but we are a National Historic Landmark, which out of the register is only 3% of those. It means we are a huge point of interest to the history of this country, as well as arts. That's not under that classification, but the instrument sets it apart from many other locations. 1998 was a restoration and modernization of the building, which we'll get to a little bit further in the presentation. There you can see the 1964 Democratic National Convention that nominated Lyndon Johnson as the Democratic nominee. What's interesting is, recall in history, this is only about 8 months after the assassination of President Kennedy. It was interesting because there are plenty of spots for a sniper to have found a perch in that building. So, of course, the Secret Service combed every inch of that building And 20 years later, in a restoration, they were finding some of the seals that the Secret Service had placed on different access points in the building. That's how long it was until they were touched again. That is a modern look at the building. And in 2017, we started hosting Stockton University's graduation. They exceeded the size of their campus ability to host a graduation. So we pack now 13,500 people, which is the current seating capacity, into the arena for that. Right now, a lot of these have been changed, as you can see, but we continue the tradition of presenting music through concerts for the public. So normally, when we're not undergoing COVID, we have daily summer recitals Monday through Friday. They are free to anyone that comes in off the boardwalk, but you will see me there with a little collection basket afterwards to try to raise money for the organization. Year-round, we host recitals at noon on Wednesdays, and we do have behind-the-scenes tours, which I know Brother Rob has taken a few times there. I see that heart. We do that every Wednesday throughout the year when we're not under COVID closure to bring people actually inside, not only the organ itself, but to areas of the building normally closed to the public. We hosted the American Theater Organ Society Convention in 2015, the Organ Historical Society Convention in 2016, the American Guild of Organists Regional Convention was held in 2019, and we were last year supposed to have the American Institute of Organ Builders. However, that has now been postponed to 2022 due to COVID. So the Mi'kmaq 5550, that's its opus number, has been described as the sonic Mount Rushmore. It was designed by a New Jersey State Senator, Emerson Lewis Richards. He was the father of the, and I'm going to blank on my term here now, the American classic organ. It was basically combining the idea of a church organ, a theater organ, to make it a full workhorse and become a symphonic instrument capable of replicating almost anything you could with a symphony orchestra. For those of us musicians, no, he was not trying to put us out of work, but to fill 5.5 million cubic feet of airspace with sound, you need an orchestra of about 150 members. So the organ served as the best way to do that and not keep a staff of 150 people on at the height of the Depression. The instrument has 449 ranks, and if you are not familiar with organ terminology, a rank is basically your different instruments in the organ's overall scheme. So clarinet, saxophone, tuba, trombone. And the instrument has, to our knowledge, 33,112 pipes. That is a working number. We keep finding things that have already been counted that we are finding more pipes for. So again, we're not going through the instrument and counting every single pipe right now. We have better things to do for the restoration, but when this is said and done, it will probably exceed that count by a few hundred more pipes. We have both a 5-manual and 7-manual console. Again, there is another 7-manual console in the works, but it is basically for a 1,140 pipe instrument. The rest of it is all electronic. So as far as acoustic is concerned, this is the 7-manual. There's a lot of one-upmanship in organ building. They can say they have a 7-manual now, but again, we know this is still going to be the world's largest. Construction began in Sorry, just noticed a typo in here. It actually began in August of 1929. The contract was signed in May of 29, which is 3 months before Black Tuesday and the start of the Great Depression. Reason this project continued, it was contracted and bonded through the city of Atlantic City, meaning the contract had to be completed. Otherwise, they would just kiss the money away anyway. So this was the only place you could really come for work during the Great Depression on pipe organs. This was the mecca of what they were doing. They employed 65 people 6 days a week in the middle of the height of the Depression. And again, the instrument was completed in December of 1932. There was a lawsuit for a period of time there because the instrument was deemed by the organist to not be complete. What we have found is that he was not lying in that, but the senator had the political prowess to make the lawsuit just basically disappear. Again, they reached the point of they just did not have the ability and the money to make this project finish. Again, This is just an idea of how big the instrument is. You can see people standing along the 32-foot contra diapason there. A large pipe organ in a cathedral may have one, possibly two 32-foot ranks. At Boardwalk Hall, we have 10 of them. We have one of only two 64-foot pipes in the world, the other in Sydney Town Hall, Sydney, Australia, and that's the only one in this hemisphere. Now, normal organs run in wind pressure from anywhere from 3 to 7 inches. A few theater organs will go up to 15 inches of water column, which is how we measure wind pressure. You may find a few 50-inch voices throughout the world. Well, Boardwalk Hall hosts 10 ranks on 50 inches of wind and 4 on 100 inches of water column, more than double you will find anywhere else. You would think they would be obliterating, but they actually add a nice capstone to the instrument. There's me standing next to that 32-foot pipe. You can get an idea of how big those pipes are when you look at a standard organ pipe. My hand doesn't even cover the mouth of this pipe. That's how wide they are. The pipe directly behind me there also holds the world record for being the world's heaviest metal organ pipe. It weighs 2,300 pounds. They are rolled out of 5/16 of an inch zinc, and they were cold rolled on a machine used to roll steamship funnels. And you can see the rest of the organ chamber beginning to be built in front of those pipes. And that's what really makes this project difficult. You can't remove parts of the instrument without basically taking down sections of the building. So the console, again, if any of you have ever played an organ console, you have 1,235 stop keys, 852 speaking registers, 35 melodic percussions, 120 swell pedal selectives, 6 swell shoes, and 1 crescendo pedal, and 2 7-octave keyboards. Now, the 4 top manuals you see there, those are standard organ manuals. They have 61 notes for the keyboard there. The 73, I'm sorry, 70, yeah, 73 note and 85 notes beneath them were something pioneered by the Midmer-Lasch company to make it that you could actually extend the range of these pipes and end up playing some pedal ranks, but also the two lowest with the 7 octaves were to make a pianist feel a little more comfortable at this instrument, because the senator recognized that there are a lot of pianists who just have to be thrust into playing a pipe organ, and that doesn't always work effectively. The grand great and grand choir divisions, as they were used, make it that you can use the pedal divisions without having to actually play the pedal board. The names on the right there are the names of the keyboards. I don't know if you can see my mouse moving, but the first is the choir, the second is the great, the third is the swell, the fourth is the solo, and that is pretty standard as far as organ consoles go. The fifth and sixth, the fanfare and echo, are two specific manuals for two divisions in the ceilings of the building. And the bombard, the seventh manual, becomes basically the catch-all for everything else in the instrument. The console was designed to be ergonomically correct, that you could reach the very top note all the way to the right on the seventh manual, yet still access all of the stop tabs at the lower left of the organist. Now, what's interesting, and again, I'm not trying to get into a comparison, I've sat at the Wanamaker organ console, which is the second largest pipe organ in the world, only about an hour away from us in Philadelphia. That console seems to be overwhelming because it spreads to either side of you, doesn't really give you the feeling of being close to a lot of the instrument, but this console really was designed with that in mind. This is just a very, very brief graphic illustration of where all the different divisions of the organ are. There are 8 chambers around the arena. 2 large chambers at the front on either side of the proscenium arch of the stage contain about half of the instrument. The 6 ancillary chambers are positioned throughout the arena to bring sound about halfway down the entire length of the arena. And the thought of that was, if they were accompanying silent films, if you had the sound just at the front of the hall, it would be about a half second before it reached the back of the hall, thereby creating some issues as far as the way the sound moved through. That gives you an idea of where the organ chambers are located. The left and right chambers were always part of the plan, as were the ceiling chambers. However, the ones on the side there, the left, middle, and left forward that you can see there, were additional sections of the building that were consumed by the senator saying he needed space for that. They were originally part of the seating gallery to get people to their seats, but they simply decided to wall them in, and that was a favor to the hall a few years later when they started to do their restoration. We were designed as the first surround sound. So again, you could start sound moving in the ceiling chamber in one division and literally roll it around the entire arena until you were playing from the ceiling in the opposite side. And the reason for that, again, was to make it that you could actually have sound equally transmitted throughout the size of the arena. The organ started to go through a slow descent into silence. When the hall was completed, talkies were already becoming popular. The end of the silent film era really began in 1927 as the hall was being built with the jazz singer. The increased popularity of amplified sound started to mean that this instrument wasn't as required. Now, Boardwalk Hall is an interesting building because we are actually 8 stories, even only 4 of them reside above the boardwalk level or the ground level. We are 4 floors above ground and 4 floors beneath ground at the Atlantic Ocean. Unfortunately, the Great Atlantic Hurricane of 1944 did a lot of damage to the building. It flooded the lowest 4 levels of our building with 15 million gallons of seawater. It damaged the organ's blower plant, and it also permanently solved the combination action of the organ. For those of you that aren't organists, trying to deal with 1,235 stop tabs with your hands while you're trying to play across 7 keyboards and another keyboard with your feet becomes a little bit difficult. Combination action is a memory system for the organist to quickly recall what they need to play. The installation of air conditioning for the 1964 Democratic National Convention presented another problem. They installed these massive air chillers and air handlers right above some of the organ chambers, and when they failed in later years, they flooded the organ chambers. The budget for the organ was really limited, basically just to the salary of a curator. So these gentlemen that served across the years for many of those years basically had to hold it together with duct tape, spit, and a prayer. And finally, we'll get into this a little bit further in the presentation, but damage from a 1998 renovation was the final nail in the coffin, many people thought, for this instrument. The building transferred ownership from Atlantic City to New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority in, I'm going to lose that number there, 1992. From 1998 to 2001, it had a $90 million restoration. 2003, it won the National Trust for Historic Preservation Award, and it was Billboard Magazine's top performing mid-size arena. Now, what is interesting with this picture, if you look at the arena, the console always is in front of the right-hand pillar. They photoshopped it out for this picture. None of us seems to know why, but again, this was the thought. It was never coming back to life. 1998 began a 3-year historic restoration at the Atlantic City Convention Hall. The music that you're hearing right now is a recording made right prior to this restoration, and many people thought it was going to be the last time the instrument would ever be heard. They were not sure what the restoration would do to the instrument, and from this point, from when this recording was made, the instrument basically sat in silence for about 14 years. The arena was modernized with a new seating arrangement. We had just built a brand new convention center in 1997. So this made Boardwalk Hall become more of an arena for large sporting events, large concert events, things that you didn't have to necessarily have the ancillary space of a modern convention center with the ability to load in and out at the same times. You can actually see one of our former board members there. She is still the historic architect for the building. It's Layla Hamroun. She was the one that pushed to have the original look of the arena come back to life, and that was the painstaking work done to restore the 1929 color scheme. In an event to modernize in 1964 for the Democratic National Convention, they painted everything battleship gray and a lovely baby puke beige. So all of the original blues and greens of the arena, making it feel like you were walking into water at the ocean, had been lost to time. However, the organ chambers, as I said, they had been walled off later in the building's construction, meant that some of the paint colors were never touched in all of those years of overpainting. So they preserved the palette for these artists to go back and actually see what some of these colors still looked like. Now you can see the interior of the arena has been reduced. The seating was brought out from the walls, and that was to make it that you could actually have a centered ice rink in the arena. We did have an ice rink as far back as 1929, but it was offset just due to where the controls for the arena were. This made it a little bit easier, and you can have full regulation ice hockey on here. Atlantic City was also the home for the Ice Capades for many years. Unfortunately, with this restoration, the organ had not fared as well. You can see right here, this is some of the damage done across the years. Number one, from lack of proper ranking of the pipes, that the construction company basically ran out of money to make sure that they were housed properly. But there are also sections of the instrument where deliberate damage was done. You can actually see a section in the ceiling where you have a body print in some of the smaller treble pipes where somebody just decided to lay down on top of them. The restoration process began basically in 1994 with a group called the Atlantic City Convention Hall and Organ Society, and their goal was to bring attention to this instrument and its plight. Their efforts led to the founding of Historic Organ Restoration Committee, which is the company I work for. They were founded as a repository for some of the lawsuits that came out of damaging this instrument. $1.17 million was to bring the instrument back to where it was as of 1998. 2007, Carl Lozier became the fourth curator of organs at the building. The original organ shop once again became active. We actually occupy what was designed to be the scenic shop of the building. In 2010, the swell division of the organ was removed for restoration. So for the first time in nearly 80 years, that entire section of one chamber was gutted out from floor to ceiling back to the way it was in 1929. The first public performance in decades was for the Miss America pageant's return in 2013. Historic Organ Restoration Committee now oversees all restoration and outreach activity for the organs. And in 2015, my colleague Nathan Bryson became the fifth curator of organs in our history. We are doing a complete mechanical and tonal restoration. So what's key to us, when you get a pipe organ, they grow with time. So for example, Wanamaker's, the second largest in the world, began as 9,000 pipes and grew and grew and grew until it became 28,500 pipes. We started as 33,112, and we have remained 33,112. We are still the original tonal scheme, which is completely rare in this industry. We restore mechanical components with materials similar to the original. We also restore the pipework with no tonal changes, and besides regulating for speech and volume as necessary. Decisions about restoration versus refurbishment or replacement, basically it's a hybridization. On a lot of instruments, if they are historic, I would agree, yes, you would restore all the original electropneumatic relays. To do that in this instrument would add another $5 million just for the cost of copper wire alone, since we have enough copper wire to wrap around the circumference of the earth twice. The restoration staff, these are my colleagues, Nathan Bryson, curator, Chuck Gibson is the assistant curator, Carl Hersom and James Martin are shop assistants, and I am the full-time outreach, basically administrator of the entire organization besides my board. When we restore the pipework, you can see we have a large pipe sink to try to clean some of these pipes out. The center picture there, Buddy Grover, we're going to get to him in just a moment. He is actually a year older than the organ. So he loves saying that he is older than the dirt he is cleaning. And it's very lucky that Carl is quite skinny and tall. He can fit within some of the pipes. If you look at the lower right of that picture, you'll see a crack in the pipe there. We could not remove that pipe, so he had to go inside it with glue, and then we had to clamp the pipe back together. Here you're going to see Sapsis Rigging Corporation. This is removing some of the pipes, again, that had not been touched in over 80 years. And again, these are not lightweight. These pipes are probably around 200 to 300 pounds that they're lowering at this point. And they are some of the biggest you can actually still remove inside that chamber. So this was done in 2010 to allow for a full restoration of the swell division. You can see some of the wind chests there behind them. And that's going to show you what the restoration of the pipework looks like. We get a lot of people on the tours that think that these are all brand new pipes, but no, we simply bring them back to their original look. The restoration of the wind chest is really where the rubber meets the road here. Leather is what we use wherever we need movement in the organ. And unfortunately, leather is the perishable part of a pipe organ. We do a lot of that work in the restoration shop. Some components are sent to outside companies, but all components are removed. Woodwork is cleaned and refinished. We apply new leather. Metal components are cleaned and lacquered if we do not need to replace them. And some of the leathers we use in the organ are cowhide, sheepskin, goatskin, and even kangaroo. Now, they did not use kangaroo in the original organ. They used a very thick sheepskin. Unfortunately, the thicker the leather is, the slower it will respond to the organist's touch. So by using kangaroo leather, it can be brought to a very thin consistency and move lightning quick, making it even more responsive to the organist's touch. New compound magnets were built by the Klon Organ Supply of Waynesboro, Virginia. They are the same people that made our original compound magnets in this instrument. They still had the plans. We simply now make them out of a composite, a resin, as opposed to what they were originally constructed of, which was pot metal. So basically, you took all the scrap metal lying around the shop, simmered it down in a, for lack of a better term, a pot, a crucible. But the issue with that is then they decay at different rates and they start to break apart. We now use PVC coated, color-coded telephone wiring, which meets modern electrical codes and makes troubleshooting easier. All of the wiring in the instrument is white. So if you had to do this originally, you had to ring it out with a light or a bell, making it extremely difficult to do. The chests are first tested in our restoration shop before being reinstalled in the chamber. Now, right there, you're going to see Buddy Grover in a minute, again, cleaning dirt that is older than him. These are some of the wind chests with about 90 years worth of dirt and grime on there. I know that video is getting a little bit laggy there. And now you can see a wind chest that weighs probably between 800 and 1200 pounds being rigged down from 50 feet above the floor there. This video is much larger, so it is beginning to lag. What is interesting, if it'll actually play, you'll see that walk board removed and knock out the light right beneath it. So it is quite interesting to see how they had to achieve it. I'm going to skip through this slide because I can see it's even lagging my video now. That is the swell division of the organ after it has been restored. You can see in the upper right-hand corner, that looks really interesting as far as mechanics. We have changed the way the motors were originally destroyed. They were supposed to be individually ganged and they did not have the ability to work well. So they were what we call wiffle tree together, meaning all of them moved at the same time, a small amount or a large amount. By having them move just in small sections, you have a much better control of the sound. Again, if you're not familiar with organs, you can't basically reduce the wind pressure, you'll detune the instrument. So you have to put the pipes in large boxes that have large Venetian or vertical blinds on them that dampen the sound. That is the grand chorus division up in the upper part of the left-hand chamber of the organ. James Martin there is working on some tuning of pipes there. And the really interesting set of pipes that you see right at the foreground are the one of the vox humanas of this organ. And again, if you're not good with Latin, vox humana is human voice. It's meant to sound like a chorus of voices singing. The restoration volunteers, we have some people that come once a week. We have out-of-state volunteers that may come a couple times a year. And then we do symposiums which basically bring in organ builders from around the world. Now, organ builders on average earn between $75 and $125 an hour. These people donate their time for 9-hour workdays, 4 days a week. We pay to feed and house them, and it allows work to move forward very quickly on the instrument. You can see that this is a labor of love. All of us basically have started in some way as volunteers, and we move into this project. We get people from the local community, people from across the country that come here that just want to help bring this back. And again, the other part of this, the organ industry was notorious for being very close-minded about their knowledge, because if you start telling too many people what your tricks were, they very soon put you out of business. But here, it's a learning facility as well to teach this to future generations. And you can see there, you know, the person that's sitting at the console there is a former Miss America teaching her daughter how to play the instrument. And you can also see we do groups of school children coming through the instrument between third grade up to high school, and they all end up experiencing something really remarkable for what you wouldn't envision being the home of the world's largest musical instrument. Friends of the Pipe Organ at Boardwalk Hall is basically a membership program to bring the funds in again to restore both pipe organs in the building. And yes, there is a second one. I'll get to that in just a moment. It's $16 million, and that is nothing to sneeze at. However, there is an instrument in New Jersey of about 4,500 pipes that is costing $2 million to restore. So you do the math here. We're actually doing organ building on the inexpensive. Basically, we're raising the money for the physical components of it, and that's about it. None of the donations go towards salary. Our salaries are maintained by a separate donor, and that allows everything that's donated to us to go directly to bringing these instruments back to life. Our social media following, we now have close to 7,500 people on Facebook, 2,900 on Instagram, and 8,600 on YouTube. We used to, on average, get maybe 2,000 to 3,000 views a year for all of our programming. However, when COVID hit last year, we pivoted within 2 months, started broadcasting recitals once a week, and we saw nearly 250,000 views last year. So that was a major win for us, and also the grantors that give us money to say that we've brought this to the world. We've also done an increased media presence. You may have seen us on NBC Nightly News. That was about 2 years ago. They gave us a short 3-minute clip, but enough to make the world see what was going on. And again, we've made it that anytime we have a visiting celebrity, if they would like to see the instrument, they are more than welcome to. You can see Beyonce at the console there. Before I arrived, we had Lady Gaga in the building, and she asked to hear the instrument, and the previous staff decided that it wasn't ready for her to hear. She's not been back to the building since, and I have said I will never let that opportunity pass us by again. Doesn't matter what hour of the day, if someone wants to see this instrument, I will do my level best to make sure that they can get into the building and use it. What's interesting is under previous administrations, the organ was sort of looked at as a curio. People just thought it was a nice speaking point to the building, but now we are starting to book acts into the building because of the instrument. So that's really, it's sad because 2020 had it. For the first time, the organ will be heard by 23,000 people as part of a modern concert, not relating to classical music or pipe organs in any way. And COVID made that vanish in the space of about 3 weeks. Now, I did say we had a second pipe organ in the building. Reason I find this one interesting, could not pass up showing a picture of it. You will notice the stop tabs are red, black, gold, and white. I don't believe that Emerson Richards was a Sinfonian, but that was a pretty standard nomenclature for pipe organs of that day. The Hall's Ballroom hosts this instrument. Again, it's a 3,000-seat theater, now the Adrian Phillips Theater, and it has a 455. So 4 in Roman numerals means it has 4 manuals or keyboards and 55 ranks. So 4,000 151 pipes. It pales in comparison to its sister instrument, but it is another glorious piece of music making technology in the building. That is now about 98% restored and functional, thanks to two very generous grants from the American Theater Organ Society. And we have actually found the original 9-foot Kimball concert grand piano elsewhere in the state and returned it to the building. It was sold off in the 1960s, and we were able to find it and bring it back to the building, and it will be undergoing restoration soon. So again, you heard the music from before. That is the new look of the console, dressed for Christmas last year, and it is a vast difference from what happened in 1998. And the organist for this is Peter Richard Conti. We named the first album published in 22 years for the organ, Deck the Hall. And of course, we're now playing Deck the Halls. It was an adequate title for something that we were all happy about. And actually, we do a fundraiser once a year called Deck the Hall that benefits CASA, Child Appointed Special Advocates. And we couldn't hold that fundraiser last year. So in lieu of that, we named the recital that, I'm sorry, the recording of the instrument after that program. And that is pretty much it for the presentation I have. I'm open to questions.
Well, let me...
Hey, I've got a question for you. So outside of restoration, what other preventative maintenance is done?
Basically, the instrument was allowed to sit in place and get destroyed by roof leaks, the air conditioning issues. Part of the 1998 restoration was a preventative measure in that. We now have cotton wicks that run around the instrument that if you so much as drop a bead of sweat on them, they set off alarms in the building and we come running. The other part of that was they decide that, well, this is a box of 90-year-old age lumber, and it's a fire hazard, so we need to install a sprinkler system in the organ as well. So for those of you familiar with sprinkler systems in concert venues, they far less frequently go off for an actual fire than they do for an oops. And one sprinkler head going off could destroy all of our restorative work. So part of the plans as we finish this is to remove that system and put in something that's going to be a little bit better for what could happen to the instrument.
Follow-up question for you. With all the possibilities of these different kinds of oops, what ensuring this instrument look like?
That is actually taken care of by the building owners. The insurance policy on the instrument is over $75 million. To build something of this size today would be upwards of $125 million.
And Scott, again, tell us what percentage of the instrument has been restored now, the large organ?
At this point, we're about 33% restored on the instrument and 55% playable. We will jump to about 65% of the instrument being playable between this year and next year as we restore wind to one of the chambers that had its wind lines severed as part of that 1998 restoration.
So, question for you. Suppose that you had an interested group of individuals that wanted to perhaps make a donation. How would we go about doing so?
If you visit boardwalkorgans.org, you can donate there. I recommend you follow us on Facebook, which is Pipe Organs of Boardwalk Hall. If you type in at Boardwalk Organs, that is the best way to reach us. There is another group called Fans. They are not associated with us. That basically is just a social media output for them to discuss the instrument. Thanks for posting that link, Dave.
Of course. Of course. Brother Angel, I see a hand up.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you can put that link in his intro when you
Absolutely.
Send it to me.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
I just now I can finally see some of the comments here, and Aaron saying 9 foot grand. Well, not only does the Kimball have a 9 foot grand, but the Midmerlash has it too. So we have 2 9 foot concert grand pianos attached to one to each of the instruments.
Fantastic. Were there any other comments about the presentation or questions for Brother Banks?
I have a nonprofit question.
Oh boy. Mm-hmm.
How do you guys go about, do you guys do have like a donor database, or is it mainly a few large donors and then what you raise at events?
We have one large donor, the Wincote Foundation out of Philadelphia, that provides the staff funding, and that is very generous of them. We're extremely grateful for it. We also were the first $1 million matching grant ever written by the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority. Basically, if you come to Atlantic City and gamble, the taxes are paid to the CRDA, and that's used to improve Atlantic City. They never had a unanimous vote before voting for our grant. And it was basically, if we raised $1 million, they would match us that million, and we hit that under our deadline. Not to say we don't still need money, but that was really an unbelievable amount of fundraising. The rest of it is a database that I maintain of about 750 people that give money, some of them monthly, some of them yearly, some of them not as frequently, but we appreciate everything from a $5 donation all the way up to thousands of dollars.
Cool. That is very enlightening for my purposes. Do you guys have any trained historians on staff, or is it mostly trained musicians?
My background is interesting because I was into document preservation. I was a custom framer for years, so we end up finding a lot of historical documents around the building and have become like the repository for those. So again, it's interesting how people have started calling me the building's historian. I don't see myself that way, but I try to discover as much as I can so that when people do have questions, I can help with them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So real quick, Brother Jan, before we get to your question, Brother Banks, is anybody else hearing a lot of buzzing as Brother Banks is talking? Yes. Real quick, Scott, could I have you mute your mic and unmute, and we'll see if that changes anything?
It's a horrifying demonic presence.
It was something else. Say something into your mic, Scott.
About now, okay.
It is not better.
hold on.
Good thing. So sorry to cut you off there, Calvin, but I wanted to address that real quick.
Is that any better?
It is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So much better.
Yeah, just unplugged and replugged it in.
Okay.
If only we could do that with so many other things. Brother Jan, go ahead.
Yeah. You had mentioned the. You were with the sprinkler system, of course, it caused a lot of damage. Do you have any other alternatives for fire suppression? Or
what the system is typical. It's called a wet system. There is also what they call a dry system, where the pipes, instead of being loaded with water, are loaded with air. That would be the next alternative. And the reason we have that, we're a state building, so everything goes for lowest bid. The person spec'd out the fire prevention systems for the organ really didn't have a clue of what they could possibly damage. The system that I'm curious about and would like to see installed is being used in some historic Philadelphia churches. And it's basically a water mist system that if it does go off, we'd have to run around pretty quickly afterwards, but just go around to the chests and wipe them dry with some towels. So that would be the best of all worlds. A lot of people have mentioned Halon or dry systems. Unfortunately, with a chamber that is 48 feet tall, 40 feet wide, and 20 feet deep, and open to a 5.5 million cubic foot space, we can't seal them off.
This is Rob again. If you get a chance to take their tour behind the scenes, it's very worthwhile. I've done that several times. And also, if you get a chance to take a recital there, it's a good experience. So some of you younger guys might not know this, but at one time Atlantic City was considered for one of our national conventions. but we've shied away from places like that and Las Vegas simply because of the gambling situation, and we don't want to be too tempting about that with have everybody missing the fraternal sessions.
So kind of going back to funding and things like that, which I was a few minutes late, I apologize, and you may have mentioned this, but are you part of the National Historic Registry? And if not, is that something that you guys would look at in hopes to get maybe grants or something like that?
We are on the National Register of Historic Places and listed as a National Historic Landmark. The reason I don't, we fall into a really odd category, and I'll give you just on the state level. I am in a constant fight between the state historical preservation and the state arts foundation, because one says I belong to the other and they don't want to give us grant funds. They literally work across the hall from one another and don't want to realize that we encompass not only historical preservation, but arts and music. So it's a difficult battle. There's very few nonprofits like this in the world. And sometimes that's a good thing and sometimes it's a bad thing. So it's difficult to truly show we're part archival. We're part basically unearthing a tomb here of music. We're part woodworking, electronics, computer for the new relay system, HVAC as far as handling wind pressure. I mean, it goes across every trade, and especially in a building with 9 trade unions, that becomes a problem, but they've looked at us all and we've won them over to realize that this is such specified work, they don't need to worry about us taking work from them.
I'll ask a question. So I don't think you mentioned anything like this, but I was wondering if there's, I know mainly there's organ recitals and such. Is there a lot of examples at all of like the organ playing with like a large ensemble or like a choir or anything like that, that would be kind of notable for people that don't know about it?
Not that we have a recording of yet, but we are working towards that. Again, for years, this thing sat in silence. So it is now being able to be seen in such a light that it could happen. What's really interesting to me is the left chamber, for example, had not spoken in 45 years before we brought it back to life in 2016. And that 2016 concert did not sound the absolute greatest because it was really just coming back to life after 45 years. Now, during the year of COVID, basically started in 2019 settling, but over that year, it allowed us to really do a lot of finite work and bring the instrument to really settle into where it needs to be. Of course, we'll blow that all right out of the water when we add another chamber to the mix, but it's the more love it gets, the better it sounds.
You ever run into issues with the historic preservation people about like, oh, you're changing too much and so you don't get this grant, or you're using the wrong materials so you don't qualify for that?
There are some people that do say that. A lot of them are more based towards the pipe organ world. And what I said is, yes, I could turn this into a true museum piece, put up big walls of glass, and leave it to be just looked at. It is a living, breathing musical instrument. We don't change things, but a good example is the relay system. There are electro-pneumatic relays with the original ones. You can still restore them. If you would like to do that, first I'm going to say, let me see the check for the $5 million in copper wiring. And then I'm going to turn you over to the building's architect and say, now you figure out how to get through 5 levels of reinforced concrete and steel to run the cable through this. It's a sticking point where on a smaller instrument, you could do it. With this instrument, you'd be running thousands upon thousands of cable. It's more efficient. We now use a Cat 6 cable around the building to carry what were thousands and thousands of bundle cables that at one point were hacksawed through, meaning that division is now silenced. So if they cut through the Cat 6 cable, there's going to be a few expletives mentioned over the building's radio system, and we're going to run downstairs and very quickly splice it back together. And in the course of a day, we'd run a new cable and we'd be back up and operational. When the last time those cables were cut, we were down for years. And just on Brother Rob's thing with Atlantic City not being considered because of the gambling, Atlantic City has gone through a lot of different incarnations. It's always a phoenix rising from the ashes. Casino gaming was big from 1980 onwards, and between the downturn in the markets of 2008 and now with COVID, Atlantic City is looking back to its roots. It was the world's playground. We are looking for more family entertainment. So hopefully a few years down the road, it might host a beautiful convention at the home of the world's largest musical instrument. I'll always be happy to do that and tell people how to save money on convention planning. Oh, I'll shut up now.
I'm pretty sure that if we survive New Orleans with the many casinos available there, I'm pretty sure we could probably survive a convention in Atlantic City as well.
And not to mention the casino that was attached to the building was brought down in February after being closed for 5 years. So you have to walk a little bit to get to them now.
Well, on that note, I want to say thank you one more time to Brother Banks. Brothers, can we show some appreciation to Brother Banks?
Thank you.
That was an amazing talk. As somebody who plays piano as a hobby, being able to see the ins and outs of just any organ, let alone the Guinness certified largest in the world, was truly something special. So thank you so much for presenting tonight.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Shall the recording end?
Sure thing.